This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Richard Bradbury. This is Enterprise BizBytes, and I'm joined in the studio by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
As usual, we'll be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock. If you want to get in touch with our show, 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp number, or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. I should get to bed earlier, shouldn't I? Right, ladies and gents, the stories we will be covering today. We'll be starting off how, according to a report, one third of all young Malaysians and their quarter life crisis. They are due to personal and professional pressures. That's
this
a lot of P's,
is alarming.
It is alarming, right?
Yeah.
Then, moving on to forget smartphone addiction, experts are worried about microfeedback. That should be interesting. Story number three. This guy decided not to take on job candidates in the traditional way via resumes and CVs. He decided to look at people via text messaging, which is a great idea.
It sounds like a lot of work.
It does, and it did cause him problems. Story number four, how WhatsApp users in Europe will need to be over the age of 16 before they start using the app. And then finally, we'll be wrapping up with a popular text therapy app. It plans to start using, plans to start prescribing drugs to its users. It's all part of a major expansion of the app. Let's start off with this third of young Malaysians and their quarter life crisis. And a reminder, 018-789-8899. If you are a young Malaysian and you are suffering from a quarter life crisis, or you think you might be, or your friend is, please do text us and let us know.
Yeah, please let me know that I'm not alone in this, because according to a LinkedIn survey, one in three young Malaysian adults have experienced or are currently going through a quarter life crisis. So this specifically is people who are in their 20s to like before the age of 30, essentially. So to many people, turning 30 is the dawning of this new era of adulthood. And, you know, there's this idea that you have to kind of have your life in a certain place by this age for a lot of people. So young Malaysians are really feeling the heat to succeed professionally and on a personal level as well before they hit 30. So a recent survey by LinkedIn showed that one in three young Malaysians in their 20s or 30s are experiencing what psychologists call the quarter life crisis, which causes anxiety or depression among young people of both genders. The survey involved just over 1,000 young working Malaysians, with 32% of the men and 29% of the women saying that they have definitely already experienced a quarter life crisis.
Wow.
Sheesh.
Three quarters of them felt pressured to succeed in their relationships, career, or finances, even though the majority of both genders already have full-time jobs. And finding a job or career that they were actually passionate about was a major issue, with 53% of men and 57% of women echoing that statement that they could not find a job that they were actually passionate about. So also almost half of Malaysian millennials, 48%, feel stuck in their current role and are looking for a way out. But the survey suggests that they don't feel that they have the right connections and they change careers entirely instead of considering other options as well.
So what are they basing their judgment against? Is it just that they feel unhappy, or are they comparing themselves to, say, their friends on social media?
I think there are a multitude of factors. First of all, I think that, you know, with how fast everything is moving at the moment, with, you know, the way technology is moving, the way that, you know, the job industry is expanding as well, I think a lot of people feel like they don't really know what they're going to do. They don't really have a guide. They don't know if they can keep up. You know, I know that a lot of recent graduates, for example, they have no idea what jobs they're going to apply for, even though they have their degree, because they have no clue where to even begin. You know, you're not really given a sort of guide to the next step past, I suppose, past the kind of routine of you go to school, you come back, go to school, to come back, and then you graduate and you're like, I have no idea what I'm going to do next. So that's one thing. The other thing is that, yes, with the advent of social media, I don't think that helps. I think, you know, especially I've already seen people my age who have gotten married, had children, or people who are my age who have, you know, really been successful in their jobs, at least from my understanding. Obviously, I don't know the whole story, right? But it does put your life very harshly into a certain perspective, and there's a pressure to feel like, how come they have their life together and I don't as well?
I don't think this is any different, though, from when I was growing up, and I suspect from when you were growing up as well, Lords. I think the only difference is probably highlighted, like you say, Christine, you referred back to social media, and you as well said that. And I think that has become a real big issue for kids who are, I say kids, I don't mean kids. younger people, you know, that has really put pressure on people because you're constantly seeing this, like you say, this stream of how well they're doing or supposedly how well they're doing.
Yeah.
But you have to remember that what you post on Instagram is not real life. You
it's
know?
Reality versus optics.
Exactly. Yeah. It's exactly that. And I go on. Sorry.
Yeah. And I remember the day I turned 30, my boss came up to me, Malik came up to me and said, "Happy birthday, Audrey. So you are 30 today." And then I just broke down into why turning 30 was not really a great thing for me, just because, you know, all my friends were married and, you know, had kids and had bought a house and they were like doing big things like climbing a mountain and things like that. And what was I doing? You know, I was just, you know, doing my job and, you know, waiting for life to happen to me, I guess, right? And he told me just one thing. He said that, you know, don't compare yourself to the people around you. You may be a well-rounded person today at the age of 30. These people may not. They might have all the other things in the world, the material things, but you know, you might actually have more at the age of 30, so don't compare yourself.
Right, exactly. I mean, everybody's fighting their own fight, right? I mean, and when I go home to the UK, and I am literally the odd one out amongst all of my friends, they're all married, they all have a mortgage, they all have a car, and I have none of those things, you know, and yet I still don't feel as though I'm in a mode of crisis, or I feel as though I haven't achieved anything. And when we talk about these things, it becomes, you know, very clear that they have had their own way of thinking about how they want their life to be. And mine is just different, you know, and I don't think you can compare.
But I think the other thing as well that might actually have a factor in this is the fact that a lot of Malaysian millennials still live with their parents, for example, and it's really difficult to find your own space and to feel like you can cross that boundary of like, at least I've moved out, at least I'm an adult now, that sort of thing. And so I think that really, you know, that does tend to affect, you know, the fact that, you know, we can't really afford to be as independent as our parents were. And then on that note as well, sometimes a lot of Malaysians in my generation have taken jobs that, you know, their parents have suggested that they take, for example, things that they don't necessarily actually like, or things that, you know, are productive or valuable, but are not really their passion. So, you know, there are a lot of factors in this. And I think as well as that, I think the current generation is also a lot more open about mental health issues and actually identifying anxiety and depression, whereas a lot of the previous generations might have just brushed it off like, never mind, I know I feel a bit
bad. Keep your chin up and keep moving.
Yeah, so, but I think there's a better conversation about that, which is good, but not great that, you know, a lot of people are suffering from these kinds of feelings.
Interesting stuff, though. Please do get in touch, 018-789-8899. Do you find yourself... I don't know if I want to. It's not a quarter-life crisis, I suppose. But, you know, do you struggle at this age with knowing where you're going and having a bit of a direction? We'd be keen to find out and have a bit of a discussion around it. Let us know. 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Speaking about social media and that kind of thing, our next story is about forgetting the smartphone addiction and talking about this thing called microfeedback. We did mention something about the whole dopamine kick you get sometimes from certain apps.
Yeah.
Is this a related kind of topic?
Yes, it is. So I think it was last year. I think it's been a full year since we discussed smartphone addiction and text neck syndrome.
Yes,
things
yes.
like that, right? Well, some analysts, some scientists have actually come up with a new piece of research that claims that our phones are not the problem here when it comes to gadget addiction. It's actually an excessive desire to collect microfeedback about ourselves. So experts have found that we're constantly checking for feedback, and this is what is addictive. So one even said that social media is a drug that causes the addiction. It's not the gadget itself. It's the micro reward we crave. So what tends to get most people excited so that they look at their phones is when they see a comment on one of their posts or a heart on their Instagram photo. So we're addicted to seeing these digital rewards. Each one releases a small drop of dopamine in our brains, and it can happen every few seconds. So that is what we're addicted to. And this is why apps like Snapchat and Instagram are rising in popularity even more than Twitter and Facebook. You notice the young ones, they're not really interested in Twitter and Facebook. They're more interested in Snapchat and in Instagram, and this is why. So microfeedback taps into our desire as humans to be noticed, to be credited, to experience recognition. And as society becomes more and more insular, more cocooned with media and gadgets, we're all looking for more feedback on our phones because we're not actually getting feedback in person.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then one of the questions that came across on this article was like, when was the last time someone came up to you personally in person and said, hey, I really like that photo that you posted that day?
Good point.
When is the last someone actually did that? They just, you know, like your photo or heart your photo on Facebook or on Instagram. So that's the kind of feedback that we're used to getting now, not an actual compliment in person.
Right. And even in this office as well, if you post a particular photograph, you see your colleagues liking it, and then you go and sit back at your desk and it's like nothing has happened.
Exactly.
Right.
And we all know that the best bosses in the workplace are the ones who give positive feedback regularly, but no one could, no boss or no one can compete with an app that has this feedback loop with these likes and this dopamine hitting likes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, even if you look at Instagram itself, the hashtags that are the most popular on there are things like OOTD, Outfit of the Day, Throwback Thursday, Flashback Friday, things that, you know, require the sort of, you know, I'm showing off a thing, whether it's a memory or an outfit or a look or something like that. And or like even like Foodstagrams, for example, you don't feel kind of validated if no one actually likes the photo. When I was younger, for instance, and this does not apply now, let's clarify, I've adjusted my relationship with social media a lot since then. But when I was in high school, I would get very physically uncomfortable if my Instagram photo had less than 10 likes on it.
Really?
Yeah. Because it was kind of like back in the day, Instagram used to show each individual username if you had less than 10 likes.
Right.
And it wouldn't just show the number. And there was something about that really bothered me. I was like, it's not just showing the number, which means not enough people have liked it, which means like I haven't posted a good photo. And that was so much pressure, which I've now really put to the side. But it does really feed into that kind of feedback loop that you get where, oh, people really like what I post. People really they think that the picture is good, it's of good quality, or they like the experience or something like that. And it's a lot of external validation that I feel a lot of, especially the younger generation, rely on very heavily.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Christine, because the younger you are, apparently, the more you crave this reward and the more depressed you get when it doesn't arrive. So it affects the younger crowd more than, you know, it does.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. Rich. Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
So what can we do to help, right? So a couple of suggestions. You can schedule your social media sessions. Maybe you review your account early in the morning and, you know, maybe later in the day, but not throughout the day, not when you're stuck in a line to get your coffee. And that is going to be really hard because that's when we whip up our phone, right? When we're waiting for something, right?
It's funny you say that because I was talking with Arvin a couple of weeks ago and he was saying that one of his habits is when he gets in the lift, he pulls out his phone and starts checking things, even though he knows he has no internet connection. Huh. It's just that you know, the simple act of having that phone in your hand and staring at that screen somehow relaxes him.
Yeah, and then you don't have to make conversation in the lift with someone else. Right?
Yeah.
Also, you could try going on a digital fast, you know, take an entire month off from social media and see how it impacts your day and how much more you interact with people in person without having that phone in your hand, right?
Funny you say that. I got in the cab this morning and normally I will get in my cab, I'll stick one headphone in, so not to be entirely rude, so I can still have a conversation, but I'll check through my stuff normally. And on this morning's journey was very different. It was a woman driver for Grab, and we just had a conversation the entire of the time from work. She was telling me, you know, about how she'd worked for a company for 29 years. She was let go, and it was just a really interesting conversation. And there's times that I forget, you know, I'm with another human being in that vehicle. I'm not just in there with my phone being, you know, shuttled around.
Mm. Yeah. And here's the final suggestion. Just to constantly remind yourself more than anything that it's just a simple realization. You have to remind yourself every time you check your account or get an email or finish a level of a game on your phone that you are in a feedback loop.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not supposed to help you feel better about yourself. You and your life is supposed to help you feel better about yourself.
I mean, I think with the younger generation, hopefully, if we keep having these conversations about how we react to social media emotionally, they will mature, and as they get older, they'll realize, you know, and they'll put those things aside. Like I've kind of done with Instagram, I'm not as reliant on those likes anymore for my own validation, but it might come with time.
All right, we have to take a break. We've got some music coming up from Gary Clark Jr. with his Next Door Neighbor Blues. If you are a one-third of those young Malaysians and you are suffering from a quarter-life crisis, do get in touch. 018-789-8899. Tell us, do you feel stuck in your job? Do you want to do something else? Do you not have any direction? And you maybe, you know,
know, we could talk about that a little bit. Let us know. Get us on Twitter as well. We're at BFM Radio. When we come back, we'll be talking about how an advertising executive asked job candidates to apply via text message, and it changed the way he thinks about hiring. That's all coming up in just a few minutes here on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. If you're only just joining us, my name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
We started off the show today about how, according to a survey, one-third of young Malaysians are experiencing a quarter-life crisis due to personal and professional pressures. We reached out to you guys at home to let us know if you're feeling any of these pressures. We've had a couple of messages. We've picked one out already. Christine, what do we have?
Yeah, so this is on Twitter from @, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce this, but @ Sheikh Sharir. And they say, I'm mid-30s, relatively stable professionally and personally, but I still continuously try to find my true purpose in life. That's my struggle. So good to know it doesn't get any better.
No, that's the next crisis. So this is the quarter life crisis. Dear. Then comes the midlife crisis. Then there's the existential crisis.
Yeah. Well, we're just making everybody really happy here, aren't we? Yeah. I mean, I'm at that stage where I'm 41 and I still do not know what I should be doing for a living, even though I've been doing this 20-something years. You know, I wake up and I'm like, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
You know, but
that's kind of comforting, though.
It is.
To know that, you know, everyone is having a similar struggle, regardless of age or gender or anything like that, that, you know, we all struggle with finding a purpose.
We do. Right. Okay, let's move on to our next story. So an advertising executive, right, went hiring for their summer 2018 internship program in New York. It's a global advertising company. They're called Havas. They took an innovative approach. So their chief creative officer, his name is Harry Bernstein, he spearheaded a initiative to have candidates simply text him their ideas rather than the traditional application process. He found that texting was a great way to personally connect with people before hiring them. The campaign was dubbed Text Me Harry B, and he asked internship candidates to text Havas's chief creative officer with their best idea about how to change the world for the better. To promote this program, billboards and ads within bus shelters near some college towns were put up, and the agency also used social media to spread the word. So what he did was receive a wide range of ideas coming in from 44 countries around the world, 47 states in the US, and over 2,000 original text exchanges. Applications were asked to boil down their ideas to about 6 lines and a photo if necessary. Within the first day, he'd exchanged about 400 text messages, carved out the time to reply, but admits that the conversations consumed him. It became a slight obsession, he actually went on to go and say. So, one of the main reasons he wanted to get the applicants to apply via text rather than the traditional cover letter was to find out broader pool of candidates. You know, it levels the playing ground, he said. He wanted to democratize the process to find talent. It wasn't about the resume. It wasn't about what school you went to. It wasn't about your past. So ideas as simple as being nicer to one another flooded his phone, along with more planned out and thought out pitches. And he noticed major topic trends in the US, including, you know, gun reform, opioid addiction. And then once he kind of got a smaller group of people, he kind of went down to a second round of Skype interviews. Now, if you think about texting potential job candidates, it could be a bit of a nightmare to many hiring managers. But, you know, he said the campaign was a success and it changed entirely the way he thinks about recruiting. And he now says, I kind of only want to hire this way. To be a great creative leader, you have to have a personal relationship with the people you work with. When you get down to it, a text conversation is short, prompt, it's very engaging, and it's one-on-one. So according to him, the only downside of the whole thing was that he thinks he has to get a hand chiropractor. Because he's got carpal tunnel syndrome, yeah. So what they did, I mean, and this is what they did, is a whole bunch of people, he's shared some of the ideas that people have pitched to him. Now, somebody said to him, this in a text message, you know, a problem that I'm currently interested in is the opioid epidemic, specifically how I can use design to assist those with the fear of withdrawal or pain without the help of opioids. My solution would be to create a kit that would make the experience feel more manageable and easy to grasp. I do this through designing tactile materials on managing the pain through mindful meditation. So that was one pitch. And he went, yep, I like that. Let's do something with that. Another one, which I thought was really interesting, was, let me just quickly scroll through these hundreds of pieces of paper that I've got here. Right. It says, hello, Harry. I'm a teacher. My name is this. My teacher told me you would like to know more about how to make the world better. And I've dreamt of this my entire life. To better the world, we must change the education system to teach love and care. Mm. By doing this, we'll be able to teach the youth how to care for one another. Also, how to deal with mental issues and how to be a great person. I feel love should be a class and taught until college. So he's like, wow, a love class, epic idea. I mean, I don't know. I mean, just getting into a room with a bunch of people and explaining to one another how important it is to kind of look after one another and care for one another, I think is a good idea. Yeah. You know, but the idea of doing stuff via text messages, I can see the benefits of this.
Yes, me too. You know, I think it's going to be a lot of work. Someone's going to be, you know, texting a whole lot more than they do every day. But then again, you know, it's also a good gauge of language, something we have an issue with here.
Yes, yes. Yeah. What do you think, Christine?
I really like this. I feel that, you know, this really takes away a lot of the issues with kind of resume applications. You know, you don't really have a lot of biases because this is not the person, it's the idea.
Yeah.
And also what I like about that is also like when it comes to texting as well, you get a sense of the way that people talk usually. I don't know about you guys, but I text the way that I talk. So I really think that it helps you to get to know how the person speaks, how they carry themselves, and even things like text etiquette, like how they manage their text etiquette. Will tell you how technologically literate they are as well, that kind of stuff. So I really enjoy this. Mm. And it's also, to be honest, it's a great way for him as a creative agency, right, as an advertising agency, to get all these great ideas for free.
Yeah.
So it really helps him from that perspective as well. And I'm very much so in love with this concept.
I think one of the big things that I would take away from this, and I've seen this when, you know, we've been hiring interns or I've been hiring whoever, when they come in and you've got a specific type of person that generally will come in, you'll have people that will come in incredibly well prepared, and you know, they'll come into that interview and they'll just nail it, and you walk out of that kind of interview with that potential employee, you know, feeling good about it. But then you'll have the other potential employees who come in with a stellar CV who just cannot nail the interview. They're nervous, they're unprepared, they're a little bit worried about that. This really breaks that barrier of, you know, going into an office, not knowing anybody, feeling really nervous and about pitching an idea that you can just do it there and then.
Yeah.
You know, I think I really like that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm interested to know if Havas Malaysia, if Andreas is doing something like this for his recruitment drive.
Indeed, indeed. Mm. Right. We have to take a break. Music coming up from Judas Priest with Breaking the Law. Again, if you want to get in touch, are you one of these third of the young Malaysians? Are you suffering from a quarter life crisis? Get in touch. Let us know. 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Back in just a few minutes with our next story about how WhatsApp says users must be 16 or older to access the app in Europe. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9.
Bring forth money. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Andre Raj
and Christine Wong.
Okay, we started off the show with a report about a third of young Malaysians and are suffering from a quarter-life crisis, according to a survey done via LinkedIn. A whole bunch of messages came in during the break. Let's start with a couple of those.
Right, so this is from Lena, who says, "Hi, Audrey, specifically Audrey. I feel you. I'm in my early 30s. Some friends are married, having kids, beautiful house, successful in business, even those below 30. Sometimes I do feel jealous and underachieving, but I dismiss it immediately because I look at what I can do that they can't. I can travel, hang out anytime without the feeling of abandoning anyone, and have money all for myself. I just chill."
All right, thanks, that's Lena, for the that. Lena.
Lovely. And then from Anne Tan, who just says, "Don't worry, you're doing very well. You're doing very well, Richard Bradbury." And can I just point out something about these messages? I am the demographic that's having the quarter life crisis. Where is my reassurance, people?
Yeah, please do get in touch. Send Christine a message. Make her feel welcome as well. 018-789-8899. Do keep them coming in. We'll be reading them out throughout the show. Now, moving on to our next story. So WhatsApp have decided that users in Europe, moving on from May the 25th, will have to be 16 years or older to access and use the app.
Yeah, so before WhatsApp's minimum age was 13 in Europe and also around the world also as well. But now, to comply with the new data privacy rules coming into force, they are raising it to 16. This is to do with the European General Data Protection Regulation Law. Basically, the idea is that they don't want minors to be using the app without permission.
Okay.
Is kind of the idea. It's not really quite clear how or if the age limit will be checked, because WhatsApp doesn't really request a lot of data from you. The only thing they really need from you is a number, a phone number and a name. So this is a bit of a weird one. Facebook, which owns WhatsApp and has a separate data policy, is taking a slightly different approach. It is asking users to nominate a parent or guardian to give permission for them to share information on the platform.
If you're under the age of 16.
If you're between 13 and 15.
I see.
If they do not, they will not see a fully personalized version of the social media platform.
Right.
And that makes sense given the kind of data Facebook needs. But for WhatsApp, I'm not really sure how they're going to do this. You know, it seems a bit funny because we have no idea how they're going to actually regulate how old their users are. WhatsApp's minimum age of use will remain for 13 years old in the rest of the world, in line with its parent. Other changes announced by WhatsApp include allowing users to download a report detailing the data it holds on them, which will be for everyone around the world. But I understand why they're doing this. I understand that it's to follow the regulations that, you know, the GDPR is setting. But they have really not actually promised or explained exactly how they can navigate, first of all, why it's kind of necessary for a messaging service to be regulated in that way. And also how they're going to regulate that when they don't even require age data in the first place.
Is there any apps here that require you to, or websites that require you to give your IC number, for example?
No.
Not that we know.
You don't want to be keying your IC number everywhere.
Not. Right,
So I'm not really sure how they're going to do this. With Facebook, obviously, you have like a birthday, at least that they have that data on you. But I'm pretty sure when I signed up for WhatsApp, that it was just like agree, put in your telephone number. Great, you're signed up. So how they're going to actually do this, I have no idea.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is that Facebook might dig through their trove of data and find out how old you actually are. Mm. You know, with all that data they've got stored somewhere. Is it? I don't know, but I mean, realistically, with Facebook owning WhatsApp, I am guessing that they would have to put some kind of implementation like they're doing for the rest of the world. You know, getting some kind of parent to sign up for it or something along those lines. But you're right, though. I don't understand why you have to be over a certain age before installing a messaging app. I mean, am I just being naive here? I know
people here who have kids who are younger than 13 who have WhatsApp.
Right.
You know, every kid has a mobile phone these days.
Right. I mean, when you think about it, even back in the day before all the smartphones and such, like, you know, kids had like little Nokia phones that they texted with. And that's really about the same amount of data that you share through WhatsApp. It's like, you know, words, pictures and stuff like that. But nothing really, I don't really know how this fits into the whole data privacy issue. You know, in that sense. And I'm not really sure what they think 13 and 15 to 15 year olds are using WhatsApp for that requires them to be locked out from the service now.
Right.
It just doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. It's like barring them from texting.
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We've got some music back to back. We've got the Blue Tones with Blue Tonic with and then Cut Off Your Hands with Oh Girl. Before we do that, though, we did have a message during the break. I'd like Christine to read this one, Chris. Can you just read this before we move on to our next story?
Yeah. So this is from a number ending in 7418. Just says, "Hi, BFM, regarding your quarter life crisis topic. I'm turning 24 this year and I'm getting married at the end of the year. My in-laws are extremely insistent on me and my significant other to do so, and it's been causing us tremendous stress because we can't talk it out to them. They're so excited about what's going to happen, be it for the wedding or after we settle down, maybe even have a kid. However, we don't even have any plans to start a family yet, as I'm still unprepared to be a mother, and also I'm still unsure on what my life goals are. I'm hoping that getting married won't hinder what I still want to do, what I still want to continue doing, and that our families will be understanding about our plans in life, even when we're still unsure on what to do." Which is a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure.
I mean, I really, when I was reading that, I feel so, you know, empathetic. I think, you know, there is a lot of pressure that comes from the older generation as well for us to hit all these milestones. Mm. But it's a different time now. And we might not hit these milestones at the same times and ages as our parents did or grandparents did or anything like
and
that.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, yes, no. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So don't, you know, I can't just dismiss this and say, you know, don't worry about it because you're going to worry about it. But, you know, over time, people will come to appreciate your own decisions and they'll let you do your own thing within reason. You know, be yourself, keep focused and don't, you know, don't bow down to peer pressure. Allow yourself to be yourself for a little while. You're still 24.
I hope everything works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And three big Care Bear hugs coming your way. Yeah.
Huge hugs.
Absolutely, right. And if you still want to get in touch, get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Final story coming up after the break, how a popular text therapy app plans to start prescribing drugs to its users, all part of a major expansion. Music here on BFM 89.9.
Boyish 40-something millionaires. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up, but if you did miss any part of the show, don't forget you can download the app from the Apple App Store or from Google Play and listen back at your leisure. Final story then in just a couple of minutes, but before we get to that, we've had a couple of messages during the break. Christine, what do we have?
So this is from Voon, who says, I am 34, and everyone has their own timeline, but sometimes I do feel like I'm lacking behind a lot in comparison with the people around me. Recently, though, I learned how to admit one thing that I'm actually very happy about, which is the freedom that I have now.
Oh, nice.
That's so nice. Thank you for that one.
All right, keep them coming. We've still got a few more minutes left. 018-789-8899. Here we go then. A popular text therapy app plans to start prescribing drugs to its users. It's called Talkspace. They're planning a massive expansion. They're bringing on psychiatrists to prescribe medications to patients through their app using its video chat tool. They're currently partnering with a fraternity, Delta Tau Delta. I don't know where they're from, but it's with its 9,000 members are going to gain free access. I don't know if you've heard about this Talkspace thing.
I've heard about this.
What is this about?
Well, it's a really simple app, and you download it to your phone, and there's a subscription fee to it, but it's for those people who would like the benefit of being able to talk to a therapist, a real therapist, but don't have the time to do it. So the subscription fees start at about, in ringgit, I think it's 191 ringgit per week.
Yeah.
But that allows you access to a dedicated therapist 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Wow.
And it's via text messaging to start off with. And if the therapist at some point feels as though you need a little bit more intensive therapy, it will then switch to video. Calling, so you can actually talk to somebody, you know, in private. Right. And I think it's been a really useful. I know friends who have used it both in the UK and in the US, and have found it incredibly useful for people that don't have time to turn off from their jobs and actually speak to somebody. But now, what they're planning to do is that there's been a bit of an issue with patients being able to get their hands on medication and one thing or another for the same reasons. But what these guys have done is that they've decided to look and bring a whole bunch of doctors on board. And one of the guys that they brought on is this guy called Leibowitz, who's going to be their chief medical officer. And they'll be the first mental health app to provide medication, and they'll be piloting it in the US starting in October of 2018. And they say many patients can't access medication. It's very expensive. The collaboration is key for better clinical outcomes and better results. Now, you can't just go on, text somebody and say, look, I need medication.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be a proper in-person consultation via video chat. And in addition to expanding the prescription drug space, they're also going to be bringing to its platform to offices and universities by offering services through employer assistance programs and by teaming up with fraternities on college campuses. It's a great, great idea.
But, you know, it sounds like it could be very easily abused.
Of course. Yeah. And I think if it's policed correctly, I think it will be something that's very, very useful. You know, so this is something, you know, if your company isn't providing kind of mental health care or something like this, maybe an office-wide subscription to something like this could be very useful.
Yeah.
Just
agreed.
Saying. Anyway, time for us to wrap up. Thank you for all of the messages and your contributions today. We will be back, of course, tomorrow, same time, same place. But before we do that, we'll quickly run through the stories that we covered this week. This afternoon, we started off with Christine's story of...
We started off with talking about how one-third of young Malaysians are experiencing a quarter-life crisis due to personal and professional pressures, which was a survey done on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and then that story about how... scientists are now saying, you know, forget smartphone addiction. What you're really addicted to is actually microfeedback. So that's what you should be looking
at. That little dopamine kick.
Yes.
Then how an advertising executive asked job candidates to apply via a text message, and it's changed the way he thinks about hiring.
And then we talked about how WhatsApp is raising the minimum age in Europe for its use of its app to 16 ahead of the data law change due to the GDPR.
Finally, wrapping up with a popular text therapy app, which is called Talkspace. they plan to start prescribing drugs to its users, part of their major expansion. Of course, that's what we spoke about today, but if you did miss any part of the show, don't forget you can always download the app from the Apple App Store or from Google Play and listen back at your leisure. If you're old-fashioned like me, head over to the website, bfm.my/podcast. But don't go anywhere, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is, of course, the Breakfast Grill replay. Now, of course, we know it's election season, and political parties across the divide are touting their policy promises. Mm-hmm. The Breakfast Grill zoomed in specifically to the area of education and compared the different education pledges being made with a couple of panelists. The first one was Datin Noor Azima from PAGE, which is the Parent Action Group for Education Malaysia, and Zamia Zulkifli from Teach for Malaysia. That was all this morning. You can listen to that, of course, after the 1 o'clock news. Don't go anywhere. This, of course, is BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.